My name's Pat. I'm a compulsive overeater. And it is an honor and a privilege to have been asked to do this. I really appreciate it. I'm kind of excited about this because I've been asked to speak at the retreat. So it's kind of like a little pregame sort of put your thoughts in order kind of thing. And who gets the opportunity to do that? I do, so that's very cool. Thank you. So I'm a compulsive overeater, and I'll talk a little bit about my mindset with food and how it started, and then talk about what drove me into these rooms to join you folks, and the hope I've experienced, and some of the myths versus realities that I'm still telling myself. So I was a chubby toddler, I think, which is fairly normal, but I had the nickname of Buddha. So there was a lot of, I was kind of considered the chubby little kid up until, you know, whatever toddler, both 0 to 3, 0 to 4. And my reaction to food has been abnormal my entire life. I realize that now, obviously, in hindsight, looking back, sitting in these rooms and doing the work with the sponsor, writing out a food history and looking at the way I've reacted to food, clearly I'm powerless and I'm a compulsive overeater. Some of the things that stick out to me as a three-year-old, like maybe 3 and a half, I remember at the breakfast table, stuffing, my dad made really big pancakes, and I took a half a pancake and I stuffed a whole pancake, half a pancake in my mouth. And the reaction from my siblings and my cousins who were there was like astonishment and stunned. And I got a little rush off of being acknowledged about the way I could eat an excessive amount of food. And so there was this sort of like immediate sort of connection to wanting, how do I describe that? Self-esteem connected to my compulsive overeating, actually feeling like it was cool as a little kid. And then really immediately, I've been impacted by sugar my entire life. Sugar has driven me in many ways. And a couple little stories I have about that are when I was a little kid, my grandma would come over on Sundays. And every time she came over, she would bring a dozen Winchells. And it was like the angels arriving. Every week, there was this intense looking the day before, knowing grandma was coming, and then being on the porch watching her walk up with that box was just the feeling was like of safety and magic and just wanting those donuts. And one Saturday or Sunday, she arrived and didn't have the box, didn't have time to go to Winchell's, but gave me money to run up to the store. There was a Winchell's up the street from our house to get the donuts and come back. And I went up there, and for some reason it was closed. And this is like the very beginning. Like, I look back on this and the stories I tell myself about what's okay and what's not, what people would want me to do. And I immediately, I was probably maybe six, maybe 5 and a half or 6. And we lived in kind of Roosevelt neighborhood, and there used to, Roosevelt Square now, it used to be a Sears. And when you walked in that Sears, in the middle of the store was this oasis for a compulsive overeater. There was this kind of a candy shop with nuts and popcorn. As soon as you walked in the store, you could smell this kind of like magical area. And I would hang out there a lot as a kid, and there was this candy in there that spoke to me, which was basically a fruit slice that was just entirely covered in sugar, like a jelly candy, right? There was no donut, so I told myself grandma would want me to get this, a bag full of this candy. That's what she would want me to do. And so I did that, And of course, I ate some on the way home, and then I got home, and that was my first inkling of the stories I tell myself are true. So grandma wasn't disappointed. She didn't care. My mom was. And I was sort of like in trouble. She took the candy away, and I didn't get to have any more of the candy. And it was a real, I remember just like being really wounded by not being able to have any more. But that drive of just wanting more. It led me, like, I got up on the stove to get the little sprinkles, and the stove had just been turned off, but the burner was still hot, so I severely burned my foot as a little kid, where I had the little electric rings on the bottom of my foot. And what else? Okay, so these are, like, in general, I just am highly focused on food, and it sort of shifted later to like a fear of, will there be enough, and I want my share. In the beginning, it was just an intensity around sugar. And around fourth or fifth grade, I started, like, I would be helping my brothers with their route, and I would get 25 cents or 50 cents for helping them. And the energy around that money was, as soon as I had enough money for sugar at the store or pinball at that time, I would break out from my house a full-on sprint down to the Cowan Park grocery, and I would play pinball, and I'd buy candy, like, every day. And I would go through phases of after school stopping at the store, and I would have to have this particular item, and I would eat that item every day for a month. And then the next month it would shift from whatever that item was to another one, and I would focus entirely for like a month, month and a half on this item every day. And the story with that is, one time in like fifth or sixth grade, a guy asked me to help him on his route, and he said, I'll give you $5 if you help me, which was a lot of money to help, just to help, it was a lot of money. Candy bars were a quarter, and I was in a phase, and I took before I went to help him on the route, I went in the store and I bought 20 of the phase that I was in. And I had on a hoodie, and it had the pocket across the front. And I had this wall of, you know, it was like a big square chocolate wall across my stomach. And I remember, like, that when I had all 20, that feeling of, this feels good. I feel safe. This is terrific. And I proceeded to eat those candy bars one after another for the next hour and a half while I helped this guy on his route. And so it's just clear, I don't have a normal reaction to food, because most people would have maybe two or three, maybe four, probably not. But most normal people go, that's a lot of candy, that's enough. Not me. I kept going. It wasn't until I got to about 14 that I started to have that feeling of, like, this is a lot of candy. I'm feeling sort of full, a little bit full. I should stop now. Maybe I'll save the rest. As I'm eating another one, I'm thinking I'll save the rest. And then the next thought was, no, there's only four or five now. That's not enough. That's not enough for a satisfying run. I'm gonna finish these. And I ate all 20, just like, in that afternoon. So that's like a really obvious, clear, like, okay, that's not normal. And I didn't even think about that. It's not normal until I got into these rooms. And so let me see. I'll just end with this. So the rest part of my childhood had kind of shifted where my mom and dad got divorced. My mom was a single mom with four kids working at a bank. We did not have a lot of money, and there was not a lot of food. And my dad did the bare minimum in terms of support. So there were times, virtually at the end of every month, there was like not enough food. And there was this feeling of real fear around that. You know, there would be a week and a half towards the end of the month where it was, as an adolescent, feeding myself Krusty's pancakes and powdered milk. And that also really intensified my, is there gonna be enough? I really want my share. I'd like the biggest slice. and I will take the biggest slice before you do, sort of energy around food. So I have this allergy and obsession to sugar and to food. I'm not normal. And I have the mental twist that people that are allergic to peanuts or strawberries, they go into anaphylactic shock or something like that. They stop eating those, and they're really clear about it. I can't eat that. And yet for me, I know that with food and even food in general, I don't have that ability to tell myself that either A, I'm full, or I just can't stop eating. I just want more. So, which kind of leads me to, well, how much time do I have? I'm
another 10 minutes.
Okay, please give me, I can be a storyteller, I realize that. So, which leads me to myths and realities. So, the summer of 2017, and July 15th, I came into Overeaters Anonymous because I hated myself. And I had spent, I dabbled. Okay, lastly, I'll just say this. This other sort of, it ties in. So I am also, I'm familiar with the 12 steps before I got here. I'm a sober alcoholic. And one story that ties in with the way I drank, with the way I eat, is as a teenager going to Roosevelt High School, I was invited to join a club, which was called the Missing Links, which was, we were supposed to hang out and do pranks, but the reality was we hung out and we drank. And the initiation for this, getting into the club, was drinking a 7-ounce Dixie cup full of beer every minute until you threw up, and then continuing. And I remember my initiation, there were a bunch of club members there, and the one person that had that went the furthest, he had 17 Dixie cups before he threw up. And I remember thinking, that's not gonna be an issue for me. And I drank 21 Dixie cups, one every minute, 7 ounces, which was almost 12 beers in 21 minutes before I threw up. And then I continued drinking. And it was that same energy of being three and eating a half a pancake and getting like, you're pretty special. That same energy tied into, look at me, I can drink excessively and handle it before I throw up. It was my self-esteem was wrapped around how much I could eat, how much I could consume, whether it be food or alcohol. And fast forward, I have been trying to sort of control my eating, or having the self-knowledge that I will compulsively overeat, I've had for a long time. And the idea of I know what I should. Yeah, we all know what is good for us in a healthy, nutritious manner. I've had that information, and there was this bit of thinking that I can control this for years. And there were times where I was very healthy and lost a significant amount of weight and would look on the outside and very healthy. And the reality was that was an emotional pain, usually like a heartbreak diet, where there was just stop eating from pain. So nothing that I have tried has ever stuck, right? I've been unable to have the power personally to control my eating. And the summer of 2017, I was about as heavy as I'd ever been. And what happens for me is I get to a place where not only not looking at myself in the mirror, there's this sort of glancing, sort of limited understanding of who I am, not really wanting to be clear about looking at myself or feeling any feeling, except that I'm whatever, I'm fat and I'm worthless and I hate myself. That's the driver. And that led me to researching a bunch of ways to lose weight on the internet. And I would pull up the top 10 diets, and there were all of these comments about how people have tried it, and here's what to look out for. And in the middle of that research, I had a moment of clarity, which was, you have not had a drink in a long time. And the reason that you have not had a drink in a long time is that the 12 steps appear to work in your life in regards to alcohol. Perhaps it might work with food and sugar. So I went to the Saturday morning U District meeting on July 15th, hating myself. And I sat in the chair, and I said I was new. And before the end of the meeting, I had this sort of step two spiritual principle feeling. It's hope. I had that feeling of, this might be possible. If I can be this step one spiritual principle, which is honesty, if I can tell myself the truth, I have some hope. And so what's happened for me because of that is that I have remained in the chairs of Overeaters Anonymous, even though I am still struggling with, I don't know if it's lurking notions. I do believe, there's no doubt I'm a compulsive overeater. There's the, or even if it's willingness, it's myth and reality. So the step one myth for me is I can control my food. I can do it. I know what I'm doing. I'll manage. And the reality is I'm powerless. You know, my attempts to control this, they've all failed. Like I mentioned before, they've looked successful, but I haven't been able to maintain them. My step two myth is that I know what I'm doing. I know what's healthy. I know how to eat. I'll do this. The reality is, given the opportunity, I will eat until, at a minimum, that I'm uncomfortable. But usually I will eat until I'm in pain and I hate myself. That's my comfort. That's my go-to. Eat until I'm in pain. My step three myth is, all right, I do believe in a power greater than myself. I realize that I'm not the center of the universe. I have turned my will and my life over. I've said the prayers. I've done it. I've said, you're in charge. I have done that stuff. I've done it. And the reality for me, and I'll wrap up with this, is that if I don't actively acknowledge that I am a compulsive overeater and I'm addicted to sugar and food every single day, if I don't acknowledge this, truly pause and say, I am a compulsive overeater and I need your help to not compulsively overeat, what ends up happening is myth two, that I can do this, kind of pushes in on the edges of my turning it over. It starts to push in those edges, and then it kind of blurs it a little bit. And the next thing you know, it's just a blackout. And I rationalize that not only will I'll do better next time, but I can do it this time. Whatever that is, right? So, it's been 20 minutes, hasn't it? Yes. I will just say, I'll close with this. It's been, I appreciate being asked to do this, because back to this honesty thing, there's a part of me that feels like an imposter. Like, I know that I'm a compulsive overeater and I need your help. And I appreciate the fact that I'm being asked to speak at meetings, that people want to hear what I have to say. I don't know, that makes me chuckle. But that, so Every time I hear, no matter how far down the scale we have gone, I think to myself, because I'm a compulsive overeater and I go up the scale, I think to myself, no matter how far up the scale I have gone, I can see how my benefit, how my experience will benefit others. And that's if I am telling the truth, if I'm in the spiritual principle of step one and I'm honestly telling you the truth, I believe it creates the hope and the faith that I can not only be helpful, but I can surrender this desire to compulsively overeat, which I still have. So I appreciate being asked to speak, and I am done.
Thank you.